This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. A North Carolina state filmmaker has been racking up awards for his documentary. The film Kefauru depicts the drawn-out end of a species. The last male northern white rhino died last year. Since birth, Sudan ran the gauntlet, consistently under threat from poachers, trophy hunters, civil war, resource extraction, and habitat loss. David Hambridge traveled to Kenya to follow the rhino's caretakers as they protected and cherished Sudan in the last years of life. There's a free moderated screening of Kefauru at 6:30 tonight at NC State. David joins me in the studio to talk about the film. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And congratulations on all the awards.
Yes, that's nicely done. Nice road.
Especially for a first-time director, tell us about how you came to this story and decided to make a film.
I went to Kenya in 2015 following a successful Kickstarter campaign, and the last week I was there, I spent it at Olpejeta Conservancy, and I met Sudan for the first time, and I also met this group of young Kenyan caretakers who were tasked to, you know, look after his well-being and show the visitors Sudan and take pictures with him. But I noticed there was a much more symbiotic relationship there. I mean, they're depending on their livelihoods at home, too, on this rhino that's on borrowed time and is eventually going to, you know, when he goes, it's going to be the extinction of a species.
Yeah, I mean, that's something for us to think about, you know, all by itself. I mean, I don't think we realize that there could be this moment when we all know this is the last of the species, and there it was. And then an effort, a really deliberate, mindful effort to care for this animal and develop this conservancy. I mean, that to me is a surprising fact all by itself.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he was, you know, he was always the topic of a lot of headlines, you know, last male northern white rhino guarded 24/7 by armed guards. So for about 4 years, there were these flashy kind of, right, you know, buzzworthy headlines. But, you know, under the surface, I knew there was a much deeper connection with these guys, these Kenyan caretakers. And they were young, too. So, you know, we identified together and really became friends for 4 years.
I mean, it's interesting to take on a project like this because in a lot of ways, you know, it's not going to have a happy ending, right?
Right.
And talk about your relationship with them. So maybe start by telling some of the story and how they came to have these jobs and then develop a relationship with this animal.
Yeah, well, you know, Sudan was the last northern white rhino of his kind. He died last year. We were there. And so the film's about, you know, 4 years leading up to that moment. I kept going back and forth and from, you know, to Kenya and visiting and staying for about a month or two and filming every day with them. And I just, you know, whether I liked it or not, they liked it or not, I was there in their lives, like, you know, during times where, you know, they might need a ride to the hospital because their daughter was going, you know, or their wife was going into preterm labor, and I was just, you know, the one that had the car. And so, you know, we just became really close, and I knew that Sudan was kind of like the connective tissue within their lives. And so I just wanted to show, you know, what that looks like when it's an animal that's going extinct, the pressure that is on them, you know, also Sudan, you know, he needed them every day to feed him, so.
We have a clip from one of those caretakers talking about his daily activities. Here's James.
People often ask me how we got to this point. Why do we fight and plunder the world until nothing is left? The harder question to answer is to why we give everything to a cause that seems so hopeless. I don't know the answers to these questions, but all I know is our story.
That's the voice of James Mwenda, the ranger at Olpejeta Conservancy, talking about caring for the last male northern white rhino. His story featured in the documentary Kefauru. My guest, David Hambridge, is an alum of NC State, and he'll be screening his documentary at NC State's campus tonight at 6:30. Well, tell us more about James and his partner and the way they came to this job, because you might come to it just because, you know, it's a living and things changed. Or did they have a kind of a connection and a reason for taking the job in the first place?
Yeah, you know, they were working at Olpejeta, and James at first was just a gatekeeper. So he would just let in people, you know, tourists coming into different parts of the conservancy. But, you know, he really had a passion for wildlife. He grew up around, you know, human-wildlife conflict. And so there would be times where elephants would, you know, just come through and parade their village and, you know, eat their crops and stuff. And they would want to fight back. But, you know, they realized that, you know, Kenya, without the wildlife, like, why would people really go, you know? I mean, there's really... It's they weren't when they were in North Carolina for the film festival circuit, you know, they were like, it's so green here, you know, why don't people want to come to North Carolina? And I was singing, I'm like, yeah, you know, Kenya's actually, there's a lot of mud. I kind of forgot about that, you know. But, you know, I just noticed that they had a major passion for, you know, rhinos especially. And Kenya and rhinos are kind of, you know, these animals that really only exist in East Africa and South Africa as well. But it was really, the problem was happening in East Africa and Kenya. And the poaching was just, you know, really becoming a big problem. And so they really wanted to be on the front line of that story and be as close as they could to Sudan. You know, they earned it.
Talk about all of the risks that the northern white rhino, but others face, and why now this particular species is extinct.
Well, it's actually a really relevant time right now because I think I was just telling somebody this earlier, but last week they successfully, so when Sudan died, there are two females left, and it's his daughter and his granddaughter. And last week they successfully were able to get 10 of the eggs from the last two remaining females. So the species is, you know, in fact, extinct by natural methods. There's no way they can reproduce, but IVF was the hope, and they've been practicing for about 10 or 15 years knowing that Sudan couldn't carry the species. So just recently they were able to retrieve the eggs from these last two northern whites, and they're now going to try to, you know, use IVF to hopefully create an embryo, and a southern white female would carry that to term. So successfully having a genetically correct northern white rhino embryo. Mm.
But again, what are some of the pressures that have forced these kinds of extinctions that are not unique to the northern white rhino?
I think, you know, corruption and you know, poaching is absolutely the number one cause of it. And, you know, just being in East Africa, the time that I spent, I did see, you know, the different sides of how much there's a lot of gray area there. And it's not as black and white as the poacher's the bad guy and, you know, the rangers are the good guys. So I really noticed, you know, that it really comes down to what you have. And if you have a life that you can, you know, provide for your family with conservation and being a conservationist, then they would choose that all day. But not everyone has that choice. So, you know, they can easily turn to poaching and try to make a quick buck.
Were the rangers really in a position of having to defend Sudan in the end, or was it just sort of watching over those last few years?
It was, I would say the last year and a half was like hospice, you know.
Yeah.
He was almost, you know, quarantined because, you know, he, you know, when he in fact collapsed and we were there filming that, you know, overnight they had to call this international team of scientists who would fly in and, you know, be able to take these genetic samples and cryogenically freeze them and save whatever genetic material they could and bank that away. So it really became a pretty high stakes environment in the last 3 days, but it was very emotional. And we just tried to focus on, you know, them and letting them be the storytellers of that and not trying to get involved in how we feel about it, obviously.
What was that like for those two rangers who you spent all that time with, that moment?
It was, you know, I think when they realized their hands could no longer, you know, provide for Sudan or make them feel better, and it was now up to science, and once, you know, he was in fact euthanized, it kind of did turn into a science experiment, and that was really hard for them to deal with and watch and actually assist in, you know, because they had to successfully get these things and, you know, be able to freeze it within a certain amount of time. And so, you know, there was really no time to assess, you know, how do you feel, you know. Hmm. We could see it all over their faces. It was mortifying. And in some ways, you know, they were, you know, not feeling good. You could tell they were pretty sick. But it was also a moment where, like, nobody knew how the right reaction should be, you know. So,
because there was a full autopsy, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
And you know, to watch that after. And what was the kind of care? I mean, what is a day in the life of a ranger who is spending all this time You know, is there much contact? Is there petting and feeding and all the sort of thing that goes on?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he was pampered. I mean, he got mud baths, you know, once or twice a week. He was fed, you know, carrots and pellets from horses. So he had a great life, I would say, the last 3 or 4 years. Also in the film, he befriends a baby southern white rhino that was abandoned from his mother. And he was an orphan. His name was Ringo Starr. He was named after the Beatle. And so, you know, they become really close, and he becomes this, like, grandfather figure to this, you know, orphan baby rhino. So, you know, he had a really good life, I would say, and they gave him their best every day, you know.
And then tell me what it was like for you, because you did develop relationships. You mentioned that in fact, I think you took James's wife, JoJo, who had to get to the hospital. She was pregnant. I mean, tell us that story. And again, tell us more about your relationship with
them. You know, I was with them almost every day for, you know, the time I was there for 4 years, back and forth. And, you know, I relied on them for a lot, you know, especially to open up their doors and their lives to me. And so we would just try to do whatever we could to kind of show them, like, you know, we appreciate the time they're giving us. And so I'd go back and we'd go grocery shopping in the village and come back and, you know, cook dinner and spend time with the families. And JoJo, one night after dinner, you know, I could tell his wife was a little bit uncomfortable. I thought maybe she just didn't enjoy the meal. But it turns out she was going into preterm labor. And as soon as I dropped off JoJo, about an hour or two later, he calls me. He says, hey, you know, I think we need to go back. And my wife's having, you know, cramps and stuff like that. And so I had to drive them to the hospital that night. And turns out for the next, couple of days she'd be in the hospital and trying to kick off that.
You had to make a choice about whether or not you were going to be a filmmaker in that
or
situation.
Yeah, midwife, I guess. Yeah. But yeah, it was a lot of those moments that we became like brothers, you know.
James and JoJo, as you say, were they both with you on the film circuit when you were showing the film initially?
Yeah.
Have you kept in touch, and what are they doing now?
Well, they are at Old Pajeta, and like I said last week, there was a big operation with science trying to save the northern whites and retrieve the eggs of the last two females. So they assisted with that, and the pictures that are available and the articles that have been published about that, you know, they're right next to the last two females, Fatu and Najin. So they're still rhino caretakers. Mm-hmm. You know, nothing's changed. They have a little bit of notoriety around their names because the film has, you know, been pretty successful on the circuits, and so people know who they are. But they already had kind of a good social media following, believe it or not, for living in the bush every day.
What is the status of the conservancy efforts? Because, you know, it's a complicated story, because a lot of the pressure and the burden is placed on local populations that in some cases have lost, you know, sort of some economic avenues to economic development for them, because mm-hmm. the greater world has, you know, mindlessly poached and harvested and extracted their wealth from them instead of conserving. And so it's a complicated story there, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, there's really no solution that is obvious, that's for sure. I think empowering the local people is probably the best way about it, because you have to have their buy-in, and they really have to be invested in wanting to see wildlife in their communities and not wanting to harm them. So, you know, that's the best way that I've seen, is just, you know, empowering the local people that are around and can also, you know, have some influence on the people that might want to poach these animals and tell them, you know, there's no reason for that.
Well, there is a reason, and there's a lot of money involved. I mean, I think that's part of that. That's where it gets complicated, and it becomes a very difficult thing to shut off. You have shown the movie around Kifaru. What kind of response are you getting?
People are you know, genuinely touched by it, I see. I think, you know, we're at a point now that we want this to be on a much larger scale, a much larger platform. So we're kind of taking it into a step where we're trying to make a more commercially viable edit. And so that's kind of what I'm focused on right now, is getting it there.
All right. And other projects, are you looking ahead to other film projects?
I don't really look ahead much more longer than a week.
What about your work in the area? I wonder about that. You talked about leaving it to local populations. Was there much pushback for you while you were filming in the area?
Yeah, you know, I had to get a lot of trust, and I think that came through showing up, you know, and being there for these big moments. You know, I wasn't there just for the moment where Sudan was collapsing. You know, I was there, but that wasn't. You know, I was there for a month before that happened. So they got used to seeing me around for 4 years. You know, and so Kenya Wildlife Service is probably the most strict and had the most say in if I could be there or not. And you know, by the time they saw me, you know, for many years, they just trusted me. But yeah, I mean, people want to, you know, offset you a little bit and make sure you have your permits. And the last trip, I had to, you know, I almost didn't get my, I have an aerial cinematography rig. I couldn't get that in there. I mean, it was a $10,000, you know, drone basically. And they almost stopped me at the airport and I had to go through jumping through some hoops for that one.
David Hambridge, director of the documentary Kifaru. He will host a free screening of the film at 6:30 tonight on the campus of NC State. Going to be a discussion afterwards moderated by Marcia Gordon, NC State professor and State of Things regular on Movies on the Radio. David, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org, and you can sign up for our newsletter and get a daily preview of our lineup. State of Things is produced by Anita Rao, Laura Pelliser, Dana Terry, Amanda Magnus, Grant Hollab-Moorman. Robin Compley is our technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.